There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abouhul, Annabelle Corton, and the rest of the Festival of Literature team.
Only on DubaiEye 103.8.
Hi there, welcome back. If you've just tuned in, we are talking about the Man Booker Prize this year and who's going to win. It's the Oscars of the literary world. But before we delve back into that, we need to have a look at what's going on locally. And we have a big announcement at the Emirates Literature Foundation. So the Montegrappa Prize is open for submissions. It's for if you're 21 and over, if you've got a manuscript that's burning a hole in a desk drawer or in your pocket somewhere, submit the first 2,000 words of your manuscript and a synopsis of 400 words, and you have the opportunity for it to be judged by a top UK literary agent called Luigi Bonomi. The prize includes an individual session with him, 2-night stay at the Intercontinental Hotel Festival City Dubai, a Montegrappa limited edition pen, so you get a fancy writerly pen to use, and a meeting with an editor to discuss the winning manuscript. And even if you're just a runner-up as well, you still get the opportunity to discuss your work. So more details can be found on emiratelitfest.com. It's an amazing opportunity. There are so many success stories from the Montegrappa Prize, aren't there, Isabel?
There are. I mean, one of these could be, if it's published in UK, could be a contender for the Booker shortlist, because this year we've had two debut novels. And again, last year we had His Bloody Project, which was from a tiny, tiny publisher, two-person publisher in Scotland. So, you know, the world's your oyster. Don't let that manuscript gather any more dust. Get it out, dust it off, and get on with your entries to the Montegrappa First Fiction Writing Prize.
Be brave, you've got to be in it to win it. Speaking of debut novels, one of these is a particular favourite of yours, isn't it, Isabel? What
it
are we
is,
talking about?
It is, Elmet by Fiona Mosley. So I downloaded all of the long list onto my Kindle. They're free samples, read them all. As soon as I read the sample of Elmet, I just got the whole book, downloaded it immediately, and then just read through the night. I could not put the book down. It is a really strange original story. So we have Daddy, or John, the main character, who is 6'7". He earns his living by fighting, bare knuckle fighting, and he has two children. He has Kathy, a daughter who seems to be in his mould in some way, but a very beautiful sylph-like character she appears to me, and Daniel, who seems to take off after his mother very much. The mother has disappeared from the scene, and they grow up with their grandmother, and they have an incident that happens at school of bullying when they're out on the beach. And their father realises that he needs to protect them from the world they live in. And so they go to a place in the forest not far from the mainline train, and they build a house in the woods, and they live, they hunt. Yes.
Where is this set? Because that's very important.
It's set in Yorkshire. So right. Elmet is an ancient, it's called Elmet, it's an ancient kingdom, in history. In English history, that there was this independent kingdom called Elmet. And so Fiona Mosley, the writer, her first degree was at Cambridge, and now she might even have finished, she's doing a PhD in medieval history. And I feel that this book brings in that medieval history into not the present day, but in the very near past. So, and the characters are absolutely indelibly printed on your brain. You cannot get away from them because of the way that she writes. You can see everything. You can see where it happened. You can see them eating food. It becomes very important. And there are some very, very visual scenes. There's the fight That's a very visual scene, would you say, Yara?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very kind of poetic and dark. I think it's the way she describes the rural landscape is really evocative and steeped in history, you feel. And the characters are really, they stay with you. She draws them out, whether it's Daddy, who's very kind of gargantuan, who basically makes his living by bare knuckle fighting. And
he's so gentle.
He's so gentle with his children.
These scenes where, for example, you know, they're living basically by what they produce and what they can get. And there's a scene where they wash his hair, their father's hair, and they cut it. And it's so tender. And the way that, that the love that he has for them and the love that they have for each other. And these children, certainly Daniel, is so innocent. He's such an innocent. And, I mean, he must be 14 at the time that a lot of the book is written. And it's told through his eyes. And so you're seeing it really through a bit of a filter. But you also know through what is not being said what is actually going on, particularly in relation to his sister Kathy.
There's this kind of narrative arc that you know is leading to tragedy, and in the way that he structures the novel, you know that something is coming. So there's this kind of tension that's built that carries you through. So it's a novel that I'm not surprised as well when you say you read it in one night, because I think there's this kind of foreshadowing that she constantly does that makes you want to get to the end of it and know what happens. And because you end up caring very deeply about this family who are outsiders. I mean, he's set up their lives in a way where they end up being outsiders.
It's a bit Robin Hood-like almost in that they are living by their morals and they are true to themselves, but it is outside of the society at large. And I read it and then I read it again, and you know, underlying it there are sort of deep issues about ownership of land and about how you know those less well off in society are treated by the sort of the rich elements of society. So, but it is with a very light touch, you know, that's not overly apparent to me. James, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a story about inequality as well. I mean, there are many themes to this book, and I think that's the richness of it, is that you have these outsiders, and what she does so well is if you were to meet these people in your everyday life, you would probably walk to the other side of the street. You would probably get away from these people as quickly as you could, because they just are different and dangerous, potentially. So, particularly the father. But I think the skill of the book is that she involves you in them. And exactly as Isabel was saying, she makes them human. She makes the tendernesses, the way in which they see the world, which would be different than most people see the world, she makes that real to all of us and understandable. And even better, she makes us root for them. We're on their side. And we see the world for all its inequality and for, you know, so why shouldn't you go to a wood, to a piece of unused land and build a house there? Why shouldn't you do that? Somebody rocks up with a piece of paper and says, oh, I own this, but you're not doing anything with it. These people are actually tending this piece of land. You begin to question the way in which we actually think of ownership, of land ownership. And I think that's one of the areas that she is particularly interested in. I mean, we can talk to her about that.
Yes, we'll be interviewing her very soon. There's a tiny bit here. It's Daniel talking about his father, who they adored. The pair of them adored, and their father never let them down. There was this absolute undying belief that he would always be there for them. He was an incredibly strong man. And so Daniel said, I never saw my father waver, never saw him lose control or stumble, and I took it for granted that I would never and could never see him cry. Perhaps he was different when he locked himself away. Perhaps he was more himself or less himself in those moments, whichever way you think of it. But I could now not say for certain because I never saw. So what they you know, Daniel questions whether what he sees is, you know, whether his father ever has any moments when he is less sure about him being able to protect them.
No.
And all I can say is the ending, I can't even think about it sometimes. It just is so, what to say?
Gut-wrenching.
It's just gut-wrenching, but beyond that, it is that...
it's graphic.
Mm.
Yeah. And you do not know in the end. You are left with this huge question that...
Yeah, I mean, it sort of lends itself to a sequel, really.
I couldn't bear that.
No.
I just couldn't bear that. I don't think I could go through that. Mm. I mean, you've read it, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Yvette Jones just hot-footed it from the Costa Reading Group, I assume.
Literally.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes.
And Elmet.
And I have read Elmet. For me, the strongest character actually was the landscape. Mm. I know that part of the world, and I've spent quite a lot of time there. And I think that sense of isolation, that rural noir, I think is the phrase, which reminds me of lots of other writers. Rose Tremaine has got a brilliant one set in France where it's the same thing. You've got that isolation, which is exactly what we experience here. But the landscape, for me, is such a huge part of this book.
Fiona Mosley is from... she grew up, I don't know if she was born there, but she's grown up in York and Yorkshire, and this was the scenery, the landscape that she saw as she travelled backwards and forwards on the train.
From John Ronson to James Dashner, Jane Austen to Zadie Smith, this is Talking of Books on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, we were just listening to an interview with Emily Freeland, who wrote one of the Booker lists, Booker books today, called A History of Wolves. We're talking about the shortlist today, trying to figure out who we think's going to win. What did you think to A History of Wolves?
I liked it. I was immediately drawn in at the beginning, and I think it's beautifully written, particularly about her sense of place. It was absolutely authentic, spot on. I loved the way that she drew the main protagonist, who calls herself Linda, whose name actually is Madeline. And, you know, the oddness of the character was really authentic, really authentic. But then it kept sort of, parts of it felt contrived. So it kept harping back to the court case and the court scene and all of that. And it felt unnecessary. I think there was too much of that about the parents who were Christian Scientists, and it was never sort of implicit, was it, in the novel?
Yeah, I probably struggled slightly with the ending as well. I did have to read it, and I know she sort of discussed that in the interview. Had to read it a few times, kept flicking back because I couldn't quite work out what was going on. For me, what I loved about the book was absolutely the sense of place. I liked the central character, and I liked in a way it was a slowish reveal for what the issue was with the little boy, with Paul, and you're almost not aware that there's anything wrong with him at first, but you know there's the court case, so you know that you know exactly what's happened. That's not a surprise.
But you don't, it's not clear, is it? I mean,
no.
It's good that it's not clear, but it's just... It seems she harps on too much about that. And then we have the history teacher who's been accused of, misbehaviour and sacked and sent somewhere else, who she's obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just too many little bits that seem... I think you said that
She's dealing with a lot of important issues delicately, but they don't really relate, and we can't really figure out how they relate. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that you liked the book, and I liked it, but I didn't love it. And at the end of it, when I looked back, I was like, well, what was the point, really? I mean, what was she really trying to say? And I keep trying to think that maybe there's something that I'm missing, and I keep going back to the fact that Linda or Maddie is a teenager, and I think she really managed to capture what it's like to be a young female teenager in a high school, and the awkwardness, the oddity, the obsession that they sometimes have. So a part of me thinks maybe that's what she was trying to do in an overall sense, is that she's trying to put on all these random bits in a teenager because that's kind of how they think and how they talk and what they think about. So I thought...
It's about the difficulties of being different, which she obviously was. You know, she's the picked on person
and teenagers
in the school.
All feel that. I mean, every teenager born thinks, oh my goodness, you know, I'm so different, no one else is like me. And I think this book, she gets it. You're absolutely right. Spot on. She really does take us into that world. And this girl is quite honestly odd. And she describes herself. And she's also able to, you know, to see herself. But then when she becomes an adult, I just don't like her anymore. I mean, she seems to have lost that, those sort of, you know, characters that make you sympathetic towards her, but also have a sneaking admiration for how she is.
That sort of goes back to the whole thing with wolves, doesn't it? That that the alpha male in the wolf pack is not always the alpha male, and it can change. And that's sort of what happens with the book. So you've got her father, you've got her, you've got Lily, who again, you know, in parts of the book is the alpha female, if you like, and then isn't. You've got Paul's dad. So I think it relates back to the idea of who's the leader of the pack, who's the one with the influence and the power. And actually she had the power maybe to do something about Paul and didn't.
But do you think she did? I never actually felt that as a teenager who was employed as a very part-time babysitter, that she could have...
No, she knew something was wrong. That much was clear.
But it wasn't.
But what do you do about it?
It was the act of omission.
Yes,
it wasn't an
that's
act
right.
that she was going and seeing. No. We're not giving anything away. You know, the child was covered in bruises or things like
that's
that.
That's right.
It was the act of omission, and she went off to the pharmacy once and things like that. But she didn't.
She had nobody to actually relate that to.
No,
though.
Her
she
parents had nobody were useless. She couldn't go home and say, and no, you know, even changing her name from Madeline to Linda. Yeah. Why did she do that?
Yeah, that's another thing. I think it's about being a teenager and identity and lying for no reason. And I think as well, how many teenagers do we know that have a really strong sense of morality, or they know what to do in this type of situation? I think as a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old, you wouldn't know what to do in that situation. But which is why it made me understand her, but still dislike her as a teenager and as an adult.
And
as
also
well.
She desperately wanted to be part of that family, didn't she? Didn't have a family. And they that close relationship with the 11-year gap between everybody, you know, that for her was important, that she fitted in and she slotted into their timeline of the 11 years between all their ages.
And I honestly don't see how she could have you know, I felt it was wrong that anyone expected her to report it, because we all know we are in situations, not just as a teenager, but as adults, where, or bullying. Take, for example, bullying. If you're a teenager and you see someone being bullied, you don't involve yourself, not because you don't want to, but you're petrified. If you involve yourself, they'll bully you often. Yeah. And I think, again, it was so well written. Those parts of it were so well written. And of course, the title is incredible because there are no wolves. It's not about wolves at all. There is no history of wolves. This is just a little bit of a history project.
I kept trying to figure out what the relation with the wolf was with the whole thing. And I kept thinking about this pack mentality. I think you were talking about that as well. And the fact that there's a commune that's broken down and there isn't really a sense of community or belonging, and the fact that she's sort of like a lone wolf as a teenager and from her parents. And that's what kind of happens when you're not within the pack.
She wants
you don't
to be
know
part
your place. Exactly,
I think that's exactly what the novel's about. I don't think it's about too many different things at all. I think it's very... It was clear to me what it was about.
What was it about?
The pack mentality, the lone wolf.
So belonging or not belonging.
Sort of, yeah. And the fact that she wasn't expected... We shouldn't have expected her to do anything in that situation. I think we're meant to be on her side. I think that's understood.
But I think it's absolutely... If that was a real situation, you know, if it was real life, it would be totally wrong of the authorities to even expect her to say anything.
In a courtroom, though, lawyers on the opposition would do that. That's what they do. It doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong.
But see, that's all good and stuff. But then I think about that teacher. I'm like, well, what does this have to do with everything else. Like, it just, it felt like there were so many different...
The teacher was the one I struggled with, I have to admit.
Yeah, it didn't fit. And then she had to sort of tie it up at the end, and that didn't make sense. You know, the whole bit at the end, it was just like, oh, well, I've got to get this off to the publishers, so I'll quickly just tie it all up and send it off, when she'd been so caring and careful about...
Yeah. But I think the idea of it having started as a short story and been expanded, I think that... it is clear from the structure, actually.
Because she's also a debut novelist, right?
It is,
right?
But she's much older. She's 39, and she's done umpteen creative writing masters.
And won a prize for the
short
story.
Yeah, okay. But maybe, you know, this is the first novel, and I think we will hear a lot more from her.
Favorite to win, then, going around the table.
I think it's between Elmet and Autumn. I won't be disappointed if Lincoln and the Bardo wins, unlike the next person to speak.
My absolute favourite to win is Elmet. And if it doesn't win, it's going to be the one that the majority of people will go and seek out and read by word of mouth recommendation. It's brilliant. It's amazing. Don't miss this opportunity to read a book that will change so much about your thinking.
Yeah, for me it would be Exit West or Elmet are the two that I would be very happy if they won, either of them.
I would love to see Elmet win. I would be very happy if Exit West won. I wouldn't be surprised if Lincoln in the Bardo won.
Oh.
I would be very happy. I really want Mohsen Hamid's Exit West to win. I think it's a great book to read, and I think it speaks volumes to what's happening around the world today. But I think, I haven't read Elmet, but based on what you've told me and your passion for it, I hope it wins. And I think that is something that's important to remember, that even if the book doesn't win, the attentions that it gets and the fact that it convinces people to read it, it makes it kind of a woman winner, as cheesy as that sounds.
I'm going to be a lone wolf and say that I really love A History of Wolves. I haven't finished reading Elmet yet, but from what you've said about it, I think I will love it. So we'll see. And Lincoln and the Bardo as well. I wouldn't be upset if that won.
Oh. Anyway, we will know before the next Talking of Books. Yeah. The announcement happens on the 17th of October, and it's the most exciting shortlist. That's all I can say. I cannot remember when I have been... quite happy if quite a few of them have won.
I would agree, actually.
Exit West.
That I've actually wanted to read them.
Yes, yeah.
It's not been
the torture that it's been in some years, where you've had to sort of plough through books and you're thinking, you know, why in the world did the judges put this on the shortlist? Except for Lincoln in the Bardo. Why in the world did judges put that on the shortlist?
Speaking of winners, we need to announce the winners of our competitions today. So The Ministry of Utmost Happiness by Arundhati Roy goes to somebody with no name. You will be contacted, though, because you did leave your mobile number. Winner of 4321 by Paul Auster is Julie Mallon. The winner of Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders. Isabel asked what the Man Booker Prize winner she got right was, and it was Life of Pi. So the winner of that is Simone. And the winner of Elmet, which is a group favourite today, by Fiona Mosley, is Hein. I don't know if I've pronounced that correctly, but we do have your mobile number, so we'll get in touch with you. That's about all that we have time for, I'm afraid, on Talking of Books. Time has just flown by today. Tune in from 10 to 1 next Saturday. Have a great day.
Christopher Robin and I walked along in the branches lit up by the moon, posing our questions to Al and Dior as our days disappear all too soon. But I've wandered much further today than I should, and I can't seem to find my way back to the world. Help me if you can, I've got to get back to the house at the corner by one. You'd be surprised, there's so much to be done. Count all the bees in the hive, chase all the clouds from the sky.
Chase the clouds away.
Back to the days of Christopher Robin Hood.
honey jar stuck on his nose. He came to me asking help and advice. From here no one knows where he goes. So I sent him to ask out the owl if he's there. How to loosen a jar from the nose of a bear. Help me if you can, I've got to get back to the house in the corner by one. You'd be surprised, there's so much to be done. Count on the bees in the hive. Chase all the clouds from the sky.
Chase the clouds away.
Back to the days of Christopher Robin and Pooh.
This is Talking of Books.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai i103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at dubaii1038.com.